This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We have a great forecast, plenty of sunshine for the next few days. Temperatures in the upper 70s, low 80s. It's 84 degrees right now at O'Hare, 73 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street as markets are slumping. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, the major averages change of heart and direction comes as Bloomberg News reports President Trump still wants tariffs on $200 billion in Chinese imports and is instructing his aides to proceed. That comes despite his Treasury Secretary's efforts to restart trade talks with China and resolve the trade war. So the Dow is now lower by 47 points to 26,099. NASDAQ down 21, S&P lower by 5. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index still up about a tenth of a percent. We did less shopping than expected in August, although retail sales for July were revised higher. Last month, purchases of cars and clothes fell. Overall, sales rose a tenth of a percent after a seven-tenths gain in July. A separate report from the University of Michigan finds consumers are feeling upbeat as sentiment jumped more than expected to a six-month high. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Lisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, the fate of Lincoln Towing and Hershey's goes healthy.
Also on today's show, Entrepreneur Friday, the person who's wants you to come to the U.S. Pizza Museum, it's here in Chicago. All of that and loads more coming up on today's Noon Business Hour.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chicago's infamous Lincoln Towing has had its license revoked but remains in business pending an appeal. We'll discuss the so-called Lincoln Park Pirates in our next segment. Right now, a very busy day of data. We are joined by Carl Riccadonna, Chief U.S. Economist at Bloomberg in New York. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Carl. We've got consumer sentiment, retail sales, inventories, production. What did they tell us?
Well, a couple of interesting themes here. So first of all, we see that consumers are in good shape, but not spending the way they did in the prior quarter. So if we look at the rate of change as it stands right now, it's running at about half the pace of Q2, and that tells us that phenomenal GDP and consumer spending numbers that we saw in the second quarter are not going to repeat in the third quarter. So things are kind of coming back to normal in terms of economic activity. But the other theme in the data was soft inflation pressures. So if the economy is really accelerating, we should be concerned about overheating and those inflation pressures potentially boiling over. That's not been the story this week. The producer price index was softer than expected. Consumer price index softer than expected. Today's import price data softer than expected. And even when we look at consumer sentiment, inflation expectations also were softer than expected. So it seems to be a new theme in the economic data that we're getting decent growth figures, but just not the inflation.
So what does the Fed do in this case?
Well, a rate increase is baked into the cake for the September meeting. That being said, as we look to future meetings like the December meeting where there could potentially be a rate increase, they may still harbor some doubts, especially if we see this new theme start to pick up some steam as the next couple of months roll by. The Fed is lately talking like they might be willing to stick to a pace of one hike per quarter. If the data don't cooperate, then they may need to think about some sort of pause somewhere along the line.
And you touched on the inflation issue. Hasn't there been a fear that especially wage increases and some of the other things going on in the economy would lead to more significant inflation?
Absolutely. At this stage of an economic cycle with the unemployment rate below 4% and growth, the underlying pace of growth accelerating, we should start to see more price pressures. And we got a hint of that in the last employment report. But unfortunately, with Hurricane Florence bearing down on the Carolinas, a lot of the economic data is going to be muddied in the course of the next couple of months. Things like average hourly earnings, retail sales, motor vehicle sales, industrial production, all of those economic statistics, which are very important to understanding what's happening in the economy, will now be distorted by these hurricane effects. First, they're depressed, and then there tends to be a pickup that's not sustainable during the initial phases of the recovery.
Yeah, and is the pickup just because of all the rebuilding or what?
Exactly. Rebuilding and replacement tends to surge in the aftermath. We saw that, for example, with Hurricane Harvey last year in Texas, a big spike in motor vehicle demand after the storm.
Okay, Carl Riccadonna, thanks so much. Always appreciate your insight and your analysis. A lot going on these days, so we'll have you back soon. Carl is chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg, based in New York. Coming up next, relief could be coming for Chicago drivers who park in spots that they think are legal, only to find their car has been towed. We will also, later on in the program, Entrepreneur Friday, talk to the person who's running the U.S. Pizza Museum here in Chicago.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A lot of people are familiar with the Steve Goodman song.
Way, hey, throw them away, the Lincoln Park.
Yeah, the Lincoln Park Pirates. Well, they could soon be completely out of business after a run-in with the state. Let's discuss the future of Lincoln Towing Service and maybe some of its history, too. Bob Reed is joining us, business writer and contributor for Chicago Magazine. Bob, maybe I shouldn't have been stunned, but I saw the reaction on social media when the story first broke that Lincoln Towing had had its license revoked. And I don't think I've ever seen so many people cheering the
big
fact
party.
That something. Yeah, it was a huge online party.
Well, you could say that state regulators have given Lincoln Towing the hook because they've moved to revoke the operating license of the company that owns Lincoln Towing. You know, what they found in a very short span of time, only a year, was 831 unauthorized tows. They found that there often were no contracts to tow on file with the regulators. And in some instances, they didn't even have a valid operator's permit to do the towing. This has been an ongoing controversy for a long time, and some say that the regulators have been slow in recognizing the problem. But you're right. There's a lot of joy right now because Lincoln Towing looks like it's going out of business.
You touch on the fact that it's you have hundreds and hundreds of things that the ICC has pointed to here. So this isn't one or two instances, and the ICC is docking these people.
No, not at all. And, you know, this comes amid decades of controversy about it. As you mentioned, a long time ago, Steve Goodman, the late, great Steve Goodman, wrote the anthem about Lincoln Park Towing. In addition to that, Mike Royko also wrote columns about Lincoln Towing and at that time took on the original owner of the organization. You know, it's been one of these things where people feared Lincoln Towing and feared that their cars were going to be held for ransom and they didn't have any real recourse to address it. So the fact that the ICC has finally looked into this is a cause for a lot of joy.
I don't understand why they didn't do it so long ago. Why?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't know why they didn't either. They were awful slow on the draw. I don't think they were that politically connected, but maybe there was some of that going on. It's hard to say. But, you know, the business community and those people that own parking lots wanted to use Lincoln Towing because they were protecting their interests. Maybe that held some sway over politicians and regulators more than it should have.
Is the ICC dragging heels on any other issue?
Well, you could always say that they're dragging their heels on big issues regarding utilities and rates and those types of things. You know, activists are always unhappy with the pace of the ICC. But, you know, this is something that everyone's entitled to due process, you know, even Lincoln Towing. So these things are going to take their time and take their course.
And when it comes to, you know, the ICC and all the people who are now really joyous about this, I guess it shows that eventually this stuff catches up with you. It may take decades at times, but it does catch up with you.
Well, this seemed to be the most egregious of issues when it came to the whole issue of towing, and it does raise the important issue of why it is necessary that other towing companies have regular audits by the regulators and that you understand what's going on. I mean, in a lot of cases, the delay was because the regulators weren't really looking at the data and weren't looking for trouble when there was plenty of trouble out there. So, yeah, you can say that one way to cure this is to have more audits, which is something the Tribune editorial page recommended.
And is that, I mean, otherwise, what you could literally have a situation where you're getting towed, you haven't done anything wrong, but there's really nothing you can do about it.
That's right. I mean, there was no recourse. I mean, what do you do when somebody takes your car and takes your possession and you're stuck with the bill and you had nowhere to go? And in particularly in the early days, they were met with an awful lot of intimidation. So you were also, in many cases, physically afraid to fight to get your property back. And, a lot of these pleas were falling on deaf ears. It's good that the ICC finally acted on this.
And nothing like going to get your car, and there it is. There's nothing where you left your car. It's blank.
Well, as Goodman said in his song, From Wilmette to Gary, there's nothing so harried. I think he was right.
Thanks for joining us today, Bob. Always nice to talk with you. Bob Reed, business writer, contributor at Chicago Magazine. Still ahead in Entrepreneur Friday, we will meet the founder and director of the U.S. Pizza Museum, a pop-up located right here in Chicago.
WBBM News Time, 12:25, a check of the markets from Bloomberg, sponsored by Top Grading Snapshot. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco losses on the day, on track for a weekly win. The Dow is down 49 points, NASDAQ lower by 17, S&P off 4. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is higher by 0.2%. The oldest motor oil brand is in a heated race with an upstart. Shares of Valvoline are down the most in 2 years, as J.P. Morgan says competition from Amazon's own motor oil brand will keep prices down. Amazon Basics motor oils have been available since July. Valvoline traces its history back 150 years when a doctor realized crude oil had no use in medicine, but saw potential in lubricating steam engines. Now let's turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had mixed prices here at the Board of Trade today. Corn's been down 1 to up 2. The moment we're unchanged at 350 and three quarters. Beans have been up 4 to down 4. Presently, November's are down 3 and a quarter at 830. And wheat's been up 11 to down 1. At the moment, we have December wheat up 8 and 3 quarters at 505 and 3 quarters. Mixed trade at the Board of Trade, and this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Pete. We've got crude oil futures slightly higher, $68.73 a barrel. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Markets are lower. We'll see what's troubling Wall Street.
Entrepreneur Friday, the U.S. Pizza Museum is now open in Chicago. We'll talk to its founder and director.
The economic damage estimates from Hurricane Florence are evolving as the storm hits the U.S. mainland. We'll get an update.
Bill Daley, the former Commerce Secretary and brother of Richard M. Daley, is set to announce on Monday that he's running for mayor.
Wall Street, the Dow down 42, NASDAQ down 12, S&P down 3. Oil had been up about 2%. It's now up just a quarter of a percent.
A beautiful 5 days ahead of us, mostly sunny today and a high temperature in the 80s. It's 84 at O'Hare, 73 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Stocks are lagging on this final day of the trading week. To talk about it, we're joined by Matt Shapiro, president at MWS Capital here in Chicago. Matt, it was sort of interesting to watch the markets. They were all up slightly. Then some talk of tariffs came out, and they all started to be down slightly. Did you notice that?
Yes. Knocked the market down. But I would say, Cisco, we're kind of coming into the middle of the month. You've noticed this cycle before, and I've mentioned it. We've had a strong month, a couple strong 3 months, really. GDP estimates are really good, 4.4%. But it seems to be that around the middle of the month, the market starts to get susceptible to certain news cycle events. As you said, an announcement of potentially $200 billion in tariffs in China the guilty plea of Paul Manafort. So certain days, you know, the markets had a good run. I thought the rally was strong, but certain stocks had been peaking out. The marijuana stocks had sort of fallen back finally, you know, a little bit of a barometer of those, you know, wild investor, you know, animal spirits. So I thought we were potentially due for a little bit of a pullback, especially with this monthly cycle that we have seen for quite a while.
In fact, some analysts are remembering that 10 years ago, you know, the economy was terrible. And as well as it seems now, and also the markets, that, you know, we could be preparing to go down again.
You know, that's been a very prominent point of discussion, Chris, and it's a little perplexing. Right now, the data points are we have a strong economy. The estimates for this quarter are strong. The next data point, in all likelihood, will be similar to that. But we have everyone coming out of the, you know, and saying, oh, you know, people who have essentially fought this tripling of the S&P 500 over the past decade and saying, well, the next data point or the market's going to slow down, the economy's going to slow down. And the likelihood of the next data point from being, you know, positive 4.4% GDP all of a sudden to being flat to negative, I just don't see that case.
But but just because, you know, as an analyst, you, of course, are open to looking at the numbers and seeing how they look. What would you be looking at if it was starting to cool off?
Well, I think the interest rate term structure is something I've talked about, is that interest rates are subdued. There's excellent housing, you know, housing starts. Home values are really good. Credit is very strong. The banks are well capitalized. So all the conditions are for continued expansion. Every day there's going to be analysts who say, hey, you know, the party's going to be over. That's part of investing. There will be slowdowns at some point in the future, but I think it's been proved time and time again that you cannot necessarily predict when that's going to happen. Granted, the market can fall any given day. We can have a correction 5-10%. Now those analysts will hang their hat and say, aha, I caught it, but I don't think that's really the case.
Yeah, I guess if you just keep saying enough times it's going to fall, it's going to fall. Eventually, you're going to be right.
You will be right. Once in the past, the market, the economy has pulled back every 5 years. Since the Federal Reserve is very strong and powerful, economic expansions seem to be longer. This one has been, of course, since 2009, about 8 years, 8-9 years. There's a chance. I believe that, you know, if the economy continues to do well, these data points are consistent, we could have a very long-term expansion like we had during those post-war years. I know no one will believe that, but it's possible.
Talk about the risk if you are investing based upon the fact that you believe that the market is going to begin in a downturn. Seems like you could end up losing a lot, at least a lot of growth.
Well, if you do believe that we've had a good run, you know, there's a little bit of concentration, say, in your Apples, your Netflix, your Amazons. What you would traditionally do is shift into more defensive sectors, your value stocks that have not performed particularly well. You'll shift into fixed income. You know, Cisco, there's nothing wrong with that. If you believe we've had a little bit of a run, that the economy may have a pullback on, you know, whatever relief you have, that's part of investing. Well, then shift your portfolio a little bit. There's nothing wrong with being a conservative investor, just like if you want to be aggressive, you know, go that route as well.
Let's talk about Hershey's. It is buying pirate's booty. What do you make of this deal? Why is Hershey doing this?
Well, you know, Hershey almost had a deal where Mondelez bought them for about $115. I've owned Hershey for quite a while. With the way Hershey is managed with the Milton Hershey Family Trust, you know, it's the number one chocolate company in the United States. The deal with Mondelez would have been transforming, but the Mondelez CEO at the time just couldn't pull the trigger on the very high price that it would have taken. So now Hershey's has sort of been lagging. The stock's been just sort of flatlining over the past 5 years. I mean, a great company, but they're trying, of course, to jumpstart and do something. I think ultimately, if the new Mondelez CEO, that's really the combination that makes sense between Mondelez International Chocolate and Confectionery Brands and Hershey. So, you know, not, I don't think a game changer for me with the new acquisition of Hershey of the new brand.
And it's interesting that Hershey's is going to increase its bet on healthy food. That's not exactly why I go to Hershey's. I go for chocolate.
Yes, please don't destroy shareholder value. Please keep on, selling chocolate. I think I agree with you, Chris.
Yeah, I don't think chocolate's going anywhere. I think it's kind of popular. All right, Matt, always appreciate the insight. Matt Shapiro, president of MWS Capital here in Chicago. Up next, Entrepreneur Friday, we learn about the Chicago-based U.S. Pizza Museum.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday here on the Noon Business Hour. The U.S. Pizza Museum was founded in 2015, but it was only virtual until it opened a temporary location here in Chicago last month. Let's learn more from Kendall Bruns, founder and director of the U.S. Pizza Museum. Right now, it's located at the Roosevelt Collection Shops at 1146 South Delano Court here in Chicago. Kendall, welcome to the Noon Business Hour. What made you say, hey, what we need here is a pizza museum?
Well, I always loved pizza, and as I started learning more about it, I realized that there were a lot of stories that just weren't being told, and I thought there would be other people that would be interested in the nostalgia factor, but then also learning about pizza.
So some of this, at least, is really about the history, because a lot of people, they know they like pizza, they just don't know what's really behind it.
Yeah, so when people come to the exhibit, the first thing that they see is it talks about how pizza was brought to the United States by Italian immigrants. And then how pizza here is different than in Italy, and it's different in different parts of the country.
So the first pizzas were what? What was striking about a pizza compared to something else that had some dressing on it?
Well, so the main thing that was different about American pizza at the beginning was that it was being cooked in coal-fired ovens instead of wood-fired ovens, like in Italy, and that was just because coal was readily available in the northeast part of the U.S. at that time. So that makes your pizza a little bit different. It makes it bake differently.
Have you acquired mementos from pizza over the decades? So what are some of the things that you would see in the museum?
Yeah, so we have items starting from the 50s all the way up to today. Some of the older things are old pizzeria menus, which are always fun because you can see like how cheap a pizza was back in the 50s compared to today, or what kind of toppings they had on the pizza. But we also have a magazine ads, toys, T-shirts, games, pretty much anything you can think of at some point had some pizza crossover.
And why Chicago? Is it just because we really love our pizza? Are you from the Chicago area? Why did you decide to do this here?
Well, I didn't do it to upset New Yorkers, which some people seem to have. I didn't have, there was not a panel of experts who decided where should the pizza museum go. It was that I live in Chicago, and I knew that there was rich history unique to Chicago related to pizza because of the invention of deep dish, but also because there's this tavern thin crust square cut pizza that's really unique to the Midwest that's prevalent here. The collection and the exhibit's really about pizza in the United States everywhere, which is why it's called the U.S. Pizza Museum. So we have a spotlight on Chicago here, but it's not the main focus. It's really about pizza everywhere.
Yeah, and when it comes to pizza everywhere, you're talking about how different things are, because I think you touched on this earlier. Different parts of the country, when you say, I want pizza, you're going to get something very different.
Yeah, and I think that people get really passionate about that because if they grew up remembering a certain kind of pizza, and that's sort of what they identify as pizza to them. And it's not just the food, it's the experience. You know, you would go to a pizzeria, you would know the people there. You had these experiences with your families or friends, parties. And so that definition of pizza to you just seems right. And so when you hear about a different kind of pizza, it can feel like a challenge to that. But I say the more the merrier, right? Like, you can have one style of pizza on Monday and a different style on Tuesday, and it's like you're almost eating kind of a different food.
So you like the flat pizza as well as the deep dish?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have opened a pizza museum if I only liked one kind of pizza, right? Like, I might have opened the deep dish pizza museum if I only liked deep dish, but my love of pizza goes way beyond one style.
So where do you see this museum going? Right now it was virtual. Now it's a pop-up, a temporary one. Where do you see this going?
Well, we're going to be at the Roosevelt Collection at least through the end of October. So we're just a third of the way through our run. So there's plenty of opportunities still to come there. And then I'm hoping that we'll stay there even longer. So that's something that we're talking about. But the only sure bet right now is come between now and October. And if we're not there, hopefully I'll find a different home. I know the collection's not going to just disappear. It might be back in my apartment for a while. But we'll be somewhere.
All right, Kendall.
Best
great
wishes.
Stuff. Yeah, best wishes to you. Kendall Bruns, founder and director of the U.S. Pizza Museum. We got a pizza place right on the block here, Chris. I think after the show, we got to...
I know. We can see it from our window.
I know. Now I have pizza on the brain. Thanks, Kendall. Still to come, tracking the damage to the economy from Hurricane Florence.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The changing nature of Hurricane Florence is also altering projections for damage, especially from flooding. Let's get the latest from Kathy Seifert, insurance equity analyst at CFRA Research in New York. Kathy, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's good to be with you.
Where do we start when you look at this terrible tragedy? How are they going to be able to roll back into lives?
Well, it's a terrible tragedy, and I think the initial response when the hurricane was downgraded to a Category 1 was sort of a collective sigh of relief. But in actuality, this could become a more costlier event for homeowners because the storm surge that is likely to occur was fueled by the Category 3 and 4 winds. But the flooding that's going to accompany that storm surge in all likelihood is not going to be covered by most homeowners' policies. Very few homeowners, less than 15% nationwide, have flood insurance protection. So for many homeowners, this becomes a very expensive, out-of-pocket event.
So what do they do, and how does this affect the economy of this area of the country?
Sure. It becomes an economic impact as opposed to just a weather impact. I mean, there are many small businesses who are in a similar situation. I mean, I worked in Lower Manhattan during Sandy, and in the aftermath of Sandy, I worked in a very large building that was flooded, and we were out of that building for several months, and a lot of the small businesses in that area went out of business because their customers weren't there. You could see a similar event happening in some of the communities that may be impacted by Florence.
So is it that a lot of people don't have access to that federal flood insurance? Do they just not think that they need it? Because it's the percentage of people who have it, especially in danger zones, pretty low.
It's a combination of factors. I mean, if you were to buy a house today and take out a mortgage and you lived in a flood-prone area, the bank would require you to have flood insurance. But again, the nature of flooding over the last 10 to 15 years has changed significantly. Many municipalities haven't updated their floodplains, so people are buying homes in flood-prone areas that are not necessarily designated floodplains, and they go without coverage. And then other people just simply do the calculation. I mean, flood insurance is not cheap, and many people do the calculation that, you know what, it doesn't cover a flooded basement, so the value really kicks in if the flooding goes above a basement level. And many people do the calculation that the cost-benefit doesn't make any sense until something like this happens.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then there certainly can be a lot of regrets. Thanks so much, Kathy. Kathy Seifert, insurance equity analyst at CFRA Research in New York. Thanks for being with us. We'll get a check of the markets from Bloomberg next. WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, small gains gave way to losses after reports that President Trump is still planning $200 billion worth of tariffs on China, new tariffs, even as the U.S. and China plan trade talks in the coming months. So the Dow is down 29 points, or about a tenth of a percent. We're at 26,117, still higher for the week. NASDAQ off 6 points now, but we are back above 8,000, also higher for the week, as is the S&P 500, off 2 points now to 2902. The Wintrust WBBM, Chicago
Chicago Index from Bloomberg gaining 0.25%. Volkswagen's board is deciding whether or not to list its heavy truck division, a move that would generate some fresh funds for its bid to challenge Daimler and Volvo. That's what sources are telling Bloomberg. They say VW intends to list the truck's unit shares next year, but that the exact timing will depend on market conditions. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.